Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the After Things podcast. I'm Bryce Castillo, joined as always with Brian Brushwood.
Hello.
And Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
This is the show that we do after Weird Things, where we talk about being a creative professional. Justin, you've got a creative professional's dilemma coming up.
I do.
On Saturday, I believe.
I do. Yeah. So here's the deal. I do a politics podcast called Politics, Politics, Politics. The best listenership that we have gotten in the history of the program was when I did something that I've long kind of wanted to do, and I really made a journey with the listeners to put me on the road in the same way that reporters and writers they get budgets and they are out there doing it. You know, there's no difference with this. Like, it's just a one-man operation instead of a gigantic operation. So I was out on the road for all the primaries and caucuses through February. And then obviously COVID happened. So now there were like no live events that you would normally be at. And the first that will come back is this Saturday in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which will be a rally for the reelection effort of President Trump. So it seemed like a no-brainer for me. My news value, the news value of all this, I felt it was like a must do to be there for the first event since the COVID thing, with the idea, the inherent understanding being that part of that news value is it might be dangerous. It might be a place where there is an outbreak. It might be something where there's a problem with it, right? But that's part of the reason why I want to go. So I'm going, but the logistics are a bit of a problem. going out there and getting a hotel is fine, even though they changed the date of the event, and so I had to change everything. But thankfully,
oh yeah, they pushed it from Friday to Saturday so that it wouldn't
Friday
be on
Friday to
June
Saturday,
10th.
And I was flying out on Saturday, so I had to change my hotel and my flight. But here's a plus for COVID. COVID has made all reschedulings very easy and a fraction of the cost that they used to be before. But the question now becomes, for me coming back, how do I ensure that I am safe coming back? And am I isolating? Am I self-isolating? Is it better that I go to a hotel? Is it better that I don't go to a hotel? Like, do I need to inform people that I've been to another place? I've traveled. And then the thing I didn't even think of until people in my chat brought it up today, because I was thinking I get back on Sunday, I'll get a test Monday. But apparently there is some school of thought, and I don't know how much of this is a relic of there being a scarcity of tests, but they had recommended that you wait a few days after you might have been exposed to get tested, which then raises the question, okay, well then do I wait 3 days after the flight? Is it 5 days after the rally? Like where is the line? And I am frustrated with it because there is no playbook, and largely I am inventing my own company's playbook on what this is. And then the after effects from that are, well, if I got attacked 4 days in an Airbnb or in a hotel or in any of these things onto every other trip, no matter how short that I take, like, does that box me in terms of what I can afford to do on a podcaster's budget?
Mm-mm.
Good news. much like flights have suddenly become more flexible than they used to be. Boy, oh boy, will anyone who has an Airbnb be thrilled to have you ride it out in their space. Like Airbnbs, like people are full on selling houses that they originally were holding on to as full-time Airbnb investments because nobody's traveling. So monetarily wise, it's not the worst thing on the planet if you have to spend the cash to do it. But I mean, ultimately, and I think you know this as well as I do, like there's only one boss, and that's your significant other. And really, like, where is she at on this?
Well, I mean, I think I do have more than one. You know, she was okay with me just going to get the test immediately, but at the same time, the question then becomes, and I appreciate where you're at with, like, you know, Airbnb people would probably want to rent it if it's its own freestanding structure, but maybe they don't want it if they're also in the house, right? At which point that cuts down my options of where I can afford to go, right? I also have to think about the fact that I'm in an apartment building, and like I want to be responsible. Like I have to figure out where that line of, like, if I just explain to a stranger that is in my apartment building, beyond them being like, well, I'd prefer nobody left and went to this thing.
What is
understandable?
Like, you do have, like, your neighbors are not the same as my neighbors. My neighbors live in a different house.
Yes.
In their own, you know, sealed off pod. And yeah. And where I go is really none of their business. But an apartment really does change those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, with my vast medical degree, I only have so many answers.
Dr. Bryce, finally.
It sounds like a good...
Welcome back from the golf course. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dr. Bryce.
I guess one of the big questions is also, like, on top of if you're going to wait between the flight back, which would be your last most exposed moment, you know, if you wait 24 or 48 hours after that to get the test, assuming you can get a test scheduled at will, is that one of the 1 hour tests, or is that like a, they're gonna have to mail it and it comes back in 1 to 3 days?
Unless I can find a 1 hour test place, then I would likely be in a situation where I would be getting the same test that I got last time, which was, I got the test on Monday morning and I got the results on Thursday morning.
Gotcha. Because I think the thinking would normally be like, hey, if you go and potentially expose yourself, you should quarantine at home for 2 weeks and see if symptoms
when there was very, very, very few tests, and right. And a lot of these, you know, this is part of the evolving situation we're dealing with, is that a lot of these rules and a lot of these things that were kind of put into place were put into place because they wanted to protect, you know, a smaller amount of tests. They don't want to have a situation where it's like you find out you're next to somebody that, you know, had COVID, or you were in the same place, and now all of a sudden you want to get a test immediately, right? It happened yesterday, and now it's the next day, and you want to get a test. You know, part of the waiting periods were to preserve, like, all right, well, let's make sure that you actually were near somebody, and it's not a confusion, because we need to protect the number.
This might be wacky. This is just a wacky. We're just spitballing. Okay.
Let's spitball. Yeah.
So right now the plan is you go out a Friday or something, you come back Sunday, and then you're in where you are. What if, considering if there's a quarantine element, would it be cheaper to stay in Oklahoma and get tested out there? I mean, I guess you would still have to fly back eventually.
I mean, I guess the question is, like, what's the inciting incident? Why am I getting tested? Am I getting tested because I'm flying? Am I getting tested because I'm at the rally? Am I getting tested?
It's got to be because you're at the rally, right? Like in general, flying is, I assume by now, from the beginning you walk in, the to the moment you get in, you'll never be out of eyeshot of a sanitizer, and you'll not see a single person not wearing a mask. I wouldn't be worried about flying. It's the rally that I think you should be dicey about.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's like, there's no line on this. Like, there's no, like, cause I could get it fucking walk. Sorry. I could get it walking down to put, you know, to check the PO box.
Sure.
So it's like, there's always the chance that I could get it anywhere, but I don't need to get a test all the time. But for, you know, the general, I'm really trying to gauge the general populace on what the general populace thinks is the safe and prudent way to do it, knowing right. for a fact that we don't currently have a safe and prudent way for an independent journalist to leave and cover a thing and then come back because I have a wife with a poor lungs.
This is 20 years later, a new generation's security theater, which at the time, shortly after 2011 or 2001, I raged against. I hated seeing the dumb parody show that we did of look all my pockets and yes, scan everything and touch everything and put them in magic machines that will or will not discover or whatever. Also, I now 20 years later understand that that came from a very human element, and that very human element has not gone away. So whether I agree with your sentiment of, let's detach ourselves from whether or not any of this is making a difference and understand that there's some amount of performance art that everybody is going to have to do when they leave and come back from now on.
I'll phrase this, I guess, kind of broadly. Would you have the means at your apartment, because I know you guys have, you know, an urban apartment, would you have the means to quarantine by yourself for even just a few days, for up to, I don't know, I guess 5 days or so that you could get a test, but try to keep Ashley's exposure down?
It would be very tough.
Right. Because, right.
It is an element that, like, you know, we could throw an air mattress in the studio and I could sleep apart from her, but it's like, realistically, we're just going to be sharing and be in close quarters no matter what. And it's like, realistically, there's only so much that we're going to be around each other to where we're going to come too close to each other.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That makes it that's what makes it tough. I guess the next step would be to price out a hotel room or price out an Airbnb in your area and see what that would look like for up to a week.
It's basically just be paying double for the hotel expenditure of what this trip is going to be. So it's basically just the hotel to exit and and maybe that's it.
Because if there wasn't an element of some amount of, you know, being immunocompromised or you know, lungs being what they are, then you know, you're sleep with your bedfellow. But if with the concern being there, I think it doesn't sound crazy to me to do that, to find a separate
place. Wolfglen 99 says stay 6 feet away, sleep in separate rooms. We live in a railroad apartment. Like there's no quarantinable section without cutting off the, like, I can't have the kitchen and my room like, and she can't have the living room and the bathroom. It's like there's just so much shared stuff there that we're gonna need to run into each other.
Can I give maybe a bit of a silver lining to all this? Remember being on the road and remember feeling how good it felt to come home and see your life partner after having been away for some amount of time? I think that's, we've talked a bit about, the breaking the addiction of life on the road. And I think part of it was one of the things that you don't have to worry about when you're on the road is, you know, taking out the garbage and doing all the, you know, partner stuff that is happening back home. And then when you do get home, it's like there's only one reality, and that's that I've been away from you for a very long time, and now we're back together. And that feels really, really good. And I think in a weird way, I miss that because it's replaced with, high-fiving each other on our way ins and outs all day and both of us splitting up, you know, garbage duties and whatever. Like, maybe... I can't think of a better way to say it that's not insulting, but maybe enjoy that opportunity to capture that moment, because part of what makes for the sweetness of coming home is being away. And instead, look, it's not great to trap yourself in a hotel or whatever, but it does. It's a bit like being on a diet and then being able to break that diet emotionally when you get home and pour everything you are into that person that you love so much.
Oh, I mean, I think that there's emotional ways to cope with it. Mostly what I'm trying to figure out now is the financial situation and even beyond that, like, all right, so let's say I get an Airbnb. Do I tell them, hey, by the way, I'm coming back from a thing where I'm going to immediately get COVID testing. And the reason why I'm doing this in your property is because I'm trying to quarantine myself. Like, is that something I say? Morally?
I don't think you have any obligation in that regard. If you perceive yourself as somebody really? Who is taking reasonable precautions, there's no reason to tell a ghost story upon entering somebody's house.
Well, and also,
like, that's like, not a service to them, and that's not a service to yourself. Like, right. Nobody, like assuming you've taken reasonable precautions, you coming in and telling a ghost story only makes it worse for everybody, including yourself.
As the proprietor of an Airbnb, they would have an expectation regardless to clean up. And at a time like this, disinfecting would be a function of that.
Expected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I kind of feel like I'm not an Airbnb person. Like, I've been to Airbnbs as a renter, but I've never rented an Airbnb thing. But I don't know where my line is on that, on if I found out, like, you know, that the person came directly from a place where they may or may not have got infected, especially a politically charged famous one.
Let me, like, put it
whether
this
or not
way,
I'd be upset.
Once somebody who runs an Airbnb starts deciding that where you're from will determine whether or not you're welcome here, I think we'll have a new can of worms. And I don't think anyone's interested in that can of worms just yet.
Like I think it, like, at the very least, like, maybe once you've been tested and once you're out the door, you say, hey, if you test positive for some reason, it's not like you're going to go back home. Or I don't know. I guess you'd have to figure out what that situation even looks
at that
like.
Point. I have no backup for if I test positive. Because then at that point, if I know for a fact that I have it, then is it cool to go get a hotel? Like, where are the lines on that?
Right. So at that point, once you're out,
you come from north of the Mason-Dixon line, do you? Let's talk about where you're staying. I mean, look. I mean, there's no way we get to that.
Airbnb has had notable discrimination problems in the past.
Yes, which makes me think that because they want to stay in business, they will reduce those and not amplify those.
Oh, they're just going to turn the dial down on discrimination. They're just going to hit the off button on.
I mean, certainly
because it's not the company, right? It's people.
And also, it's like my point is less about what Airbnb the platform will back me up on if I'm like oh, they're discriminating, but more like morally, morally, what am I expected to do? Like, where are the lines where somebody would say, yeah, that guy took proper precautions?
So in future Star Trek world, you will poke your finger in an instant test and know at all times whether or not you have COVID.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we live in the 1900s or 1800s where COVID is essentially a ghost miasma that you may or may not have based on, tell me a story of where you came from and I'll decide if you have the ghost miasma of COVID or whatever, which is a real bummer. And what I'm trying to get at is the answer will be different depending on who you're talking to and under what conditions. The story that you tell your wife might be factually the same story that you tell an Airbnb person, but they're going to hear two different tales, even though you use the same words in both tales. Does that make sense?
I guess my issue is not necessarily what I tell people, but more what is my North Star? Like what do I...
I think you should report the facts, right? If they ask where you're coming from, I'm from out of town. You did come from out of town. Once you know the reality of before you know whether the results of your test are positive or negative, you couldn't say either way. It would be weird to even say quarantining here.
Yeah, I feel like we're getting hung up on this very specific Airbnb thing where I don't know that would be a thing that I would do.
Gotcha.
Right? Like I may just get a hotel and so I don't have to deal with this being a person to person, quote unquote, kind of contact. I instead have the safety of a cold corporation that is paying its employees to disinfect things. And I can just hit do not disturb and be in this bubble and just have food brought to the
here's what I suspect. The people you're worried about in this situation are the people whose full-time job is to watch water flow past them, and it's the same water. It's water equals travelers from afar who may or may not have quote unquote the disease. I don't think that Airbnb earns itself a privileged status of people who get to pretend that they're entitled to guests for money, and also the expectation that they're not travelers. So with that being, I mean, you've disclosed the most important fact of all, which is you are a capital T traveler, and everybody understands all the baggage that comes with that. If your gold is pure, if your coin is solid, then you may stay at this tavern. That's kind of the end of the discussion. Anything you say will be lies from their point of view. So don't even bother to say anything. I don't see the point in saying anything.
And as far as like other people in the apartment or on the street, whatever. Like, I think there isn't anything to say other than like, yeah, I was out of town. And, I'll be getting a test. Like, whatever.
I got a test. I'm waiting on the results. I'm just going to hole up over here, do some takeout, whatever. And all of that, like, the courtesy you're extending there is just make sure to Lysol this room after I leave. But also, I don't intend to, come and rub, cough on everything you have or whatever.
Well, a lot to think about, but we'll find out next week.
Hold on. By the way,
from this trip next week.
That's hilarious, JC Calhoun in the chat. How about camping out for a couple of weeks? Camping. That seems like something that Justin would love to do.
Notable outdoorsman Justin Robert Young.
Yeah, I mean, well, you can
camp outside in the great indoors, maybe under a bridge.
the point of this conversation is to just kind of generally take a look at, you know, where people are at, what people think would be reasonable. I don't necessarily think that it's going to be me being in a tent for a week, but
yeah,
we'll figure it out.
Yeah. You don't need to go making pins that say, I just recently traveled, but I'm getting a test and I'm waiting 1 to 3 business days for the, like,
yeah,
I mean, you don't need to advertise.
All politics are local. And I guess the two biggest things that I worry about are, you know, we have a very COVID aware building, mm-hmm. like the superintendent, who's very, very good. She is very attentive. She's the best, but very dialed in on, like, these kinds of things, to the point where if I came back and was staying, even let's say I was quarantining with Ashley, right, and we were trying to stay away from each other, that is something that I feel like I would rather her hear from me than there to be some other thing, and I would rather let her know when I get my test result and stuff like that. But also it's the wife too. And, and then also the fact that I live publicly. So it's like, there's not a lot that I can do if I wanted to be like, this, like, I'm going to go and I'm going to not wear a mask and I'm going to not give a shit. And then I'm going to come back and I'm not going to get tested. Cause guess what? I'm just living my life, baby. Like, I can't do that and do the content I do,
right,
without that becoming a part of it. So, you know, you have to, when you're living publicly, it means you have to think about this kind
of
shit.
that was part of the whole thing with getting a lawyer to say, like, hey, legally, what are we allowed to do on a residence versus a commercial business or whatever? And so we've found ourselves, you know, continuing to rent the property down the way because a pallet coming in and a pallet coming out. This being a commercial address, I mean, there's no question that's you're running a commercial business.
Yeah.
But part of how we got this is like, no, this is a second residence and all that stuff. And luckily, media creation, especially YouTube and Twitch, happens to be, as my lawyers remind me, accessory use of a residence, which, regardless of the scale of the success of that endeavor, is perfectly legitimate and reasonable.
Yeah. Like, so, Stephen King can create millions of dollars with his words in a house.
Right. And that doesn't make it a commercial enterprise.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But thank you, lawyers, for giving me those words. Yeah,
that's our hot tip. Consult your lawyer, Justin.
Yeah.
Consult my lawyer.
All right. Well, I guess that'll be it for after things, unless we want to do picks. I don't know.
Super short. I'll just say I finished up Wind of Change. It ended up exactly the way you would imagine.
This was the podcast about the song Wind of Change?
Yeah, correct. By the Scorpions, and the theory that it was written by the CIA. Most of it is an exploration of wacky stuff the CIA has done, but they do a good job of finding a landing point. Like, at some point you realize, okay, even if it was written by the CIA, there's no way, like, it becomes very clear pretty early on that there's no way these podcasters are going to be the ones to crack the case and get them on the CIA. But it does lead up to a moment where the main guy talks to the guy who wrote the song. And by then the conversation pivots to, hey, if I wrote a song that is powerful and definitive and well-beloved and indicative of one of the greatest political changes in my entire continent, I might be a little bit insulted if some podcaster came up and said, so anyway, did the CIA write the song? And so that kind of becomes the bigger worry as he goes into the interview.
So it's a missing Richard Simmons?
No. But Richard Simmons shows up.
Sure, but the end of that is me as the hand have I've got these big dumb fingers and I can't weasel my way into the truth.
So that's the quest, right? But it ends with, imagine if missing Richard Simmons ended up with him meeting Richard Simmons, telling him the theories that he's heard, and Richard Simmons laughing and saying, holy cow, I'd never thought of it that way. And then having a fascinating 2-hour conversation afterwards. Like he confronts the guy, the headman of the Scorpions, and said, this is the story that we've heard. And it's like, and so by the end, it's like, he's like, no, I wrote the song, but wow, I had never heard that story before. And then the guy starts telling him, like, well, whether it's true or not, it's told as a ghost story within the CIA. Like, people within the CIA are proud to share this story. And that alone, you know, becomes kind of a compliment to him. And he's fascinated and is joyful. I like the way this ended so much better than missing Richard Simmons. It's a fun journey. I really liked it. Wind of Change.
Cool. Wind of Change. Justin, you got a pick?
Vulture did their TV festival last year, and Community did a panel. I've been rewatching Community. It's a good panel. They talk fairly candidly about working with Chevy Chase and what it was like, with Donald Glover's kind of career exploding. But and then of course there's a funny Dan Harmon and Joel McHale witticisms, and I'm pretty sure Ken Jeong is drunk.
Very cool. It's on YouTube. We'll have a link in the show notes.
There's nothing I didn't love about all of those vectors.
I got a super quick pick. Hulu did not. I binged this show on Hulu, and then it did not tell me that they got a new season of it. But the TNT crime drama Claws, season 3, is now on Hulu. I think I've talked about this briefly, but it's a Niecy Nash starring as a Florida, the proprietor of a Florida nail salon that is cleaning money for the Florida cartel, and all of the drama. In fact, Breaking Bad's own
cop,
Dean Norris.
Dean Norris
is a similar gruff, aggressive guy, but this time he's on the side of the cartel. Really cool, interesting stuff.
Is he still as dorky as he was in Breaking Bad?
He affects a very specific accent. Okay. That is, the other interesting person on the cast is Harold Perrineau.
The guy who played Michael on Lost?
Yeah.
Got it.
He plays Niecy Nash's brother, who has, I believe it's autism or some sort of developmental disorder, and it's played well. It's not played for this like hokey, token character.
I feel like most of society sort of moved beyond the novelty. I mean, we've had all the way since Rain Man to get used to the idea that some people have autism, and so that's cool that it's kind of a non-issue, that's just a thing.
Yeah, and he has his own kind of story arc in terms of coming of age as an adult living with his older sister. So pretty cool. That's Claws. On TNT. I'm watching it on Hulu.
Cool.
All right. Well, anything else, guys?
No.
I think we solved it.
Go forth and stay in a Airbnb, but also make sure it's you're alone, or disclose, or never leave.
Or talk to a lawyer. And
sorry, yes,
talk to lawyers. Figure out really what you're going to do.
Yeah.
For Brian, Justin, Andrew, I'm Bryce. This has been After Things. It's been After.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.